Good evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. It's got to be Wednesday night at 7 p.m. because here we are in Willoughby, Ohio, and we're taking our weekly program and we're going to talk. We're going to talk about small businesses like we always do. And we're going to have fun doing it. I'm here with my co-host, Adam Sunhalter, and we have a special guest tonight, Ken Fanger. And he's with the company, he's president of a company and co-founder, along with his wife, of a company called On Technology Partners. It's an IT company, as it can be drawn from the title, I'm sure. What they do, the company deals with monitoring and security scanning, risk management, government services, a variety of those, and strategic planning. We met Ken through some contacts with Goldman Sachs, and we're going to talk with him tonight after we kind of introduce our normal process here. We'll get into it with him pretty quickly. But as you know, I'm again here with Adam, and we talk about small businesses, and we define that from 1 to 25 employees. Could be any industry, makes no difference. We deal with it. We've been doing it together as business partners here for 15 years. Or is it 16 years?
16
it's a long
now,
time.
Yeah.
16 and counting. So
we'll just round up, Jack. Make it, it'll be nearly 20.
We
nearly
know,
two
yeah,
decades,
we know
right?
Something like that. So, yeah, close to it.
Right.
It's under 20, right? So anyway, we're going to hear about Ken tonight, which is good. And I'm going to turn this over to Adam to pick it up and take it from there.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us again. If you're new, welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. If you've been around and heard us before, welcome back. We're glad to have you here. As you know, you're always welcome to be part of the show, and there's a couple ways to do that. Probably the easiest way is to write down this number, because this number is for the phone. And if you're nice to Scotty, who's sitting by, he may let you on the air. Or you can also text using the same number. That's 440-946-9468. Again, 440-946-9468. So if you have questions, if you're going through with Ken here, if you have some questions, we might have you on the air. But we want to get to Ken. Ken's got a great story to tell. As Jack said, he's a Goldman Sachs 10,000 small business graduate, and once a month we're having graduates on to kind of share their story. And part of the story that he'll share, we'll probably do it in our second or third segment here, we'll be talking about his experience with Goldman Sachs. But before we get to that part, we'd like to hear more about Ken and learn about him and kind of how he got where he is. So, hey, Ken, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on here tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So Ken's a very energetic guy, and he gets excited like I do. So Jack's going to have to probably slow us down. We'll start talking too fast, but he'll make sure he kind of keeps us under wraps here. But if you wouldn't mind, Ken, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself real quick to the audience, kind of let them know kind of where you grew up, your education, maybe a little bit of business experience, and we can kind of then roll that into kind of how On Technology Partners kind of happened. So we want, just give us a little bit of background, if you wouldn't mind.
So I am a Northeastern Ohio native, and I went to Miami for my undergraduate work. In Michigan State, I got my MBA.
I won't hold that against you. I'm a Michigan guy, but go ahead.
We got
a lot of Ohio State guys. We don't care about the Ohio State fans. That's all right. That's all right. Get all the bad stuff out of the way first.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm Ohio U. Can I get in that conversation?
That's the MAC, you know. That's not Big Ten. That's all right. Hey, it's Big Ten. That's okay. That's good. All right. Sorry. So Michigan State, graduate degree.
So after that, I think every entrepreneur realizes very quickly that they are an entrepreneur. And I found that out by starting out my life at BP. And as a BP, I was in the payroll programming. And I was in charge of actually being... So I would write programs that moved billions of dollars in payroll. And I remember sitting at a table with senior programmers. And they were talking over me. They were doing a lot of... really complex words, and I just sat there confused. I gave up, and I started going through the program. And as I was going through the program, I realized that the program was wrong. And I said, excuse me, this is not transferring the money properly. And they looked at me, and they saw a 20-year-old, and they're like, what are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. I said, this is not transferring the money properly. You are leaving the last company off. And they're like, you don't know what you're talking about. Every week, they did not have Truck Stops of America's payroll transferred. It was over $100 million not transferred. So they were paying a penalty on $100 million every week.
Oh, jeez.
And nobody caught this. And I realized something that was really important, which was they let their pride get in the way of doing something right. And right there, I realized I made a promise myself. I said I would always be wrong. The only thing I'd require of anybody was to prove how I was wrong. So I brought that, and I tell all of my employees now, always tell me how I'm wrong. I will always be wrong. Just tell me how. Okay. And that was the first thing I learned as an entrepreneur is I'm always wrong. And so
always wrong. Okay. That's good. That's good. We'll often
Adam,
talk.
Adam is always right. That's what we.
I've been told about. That's one of my. I always thought it was one of my good qualities, but I'm learning, Ken. It's one of my faults is being right too much. And my kids are always poking fun at me when I screw stuff up. Yeah, well, it doesn't happen very often, you know. So it's gotta be good. But in terms of being wrong, we talk a lot, Jack, about folks appreciating what they don't know, or you know, mm-hmm. we try to use the phrase like knowing what you don't know. Yep. So that's a version. I think what you're saying is, hey, you know. Yep. I don't know everything, so I know I'm going to be wrong somehow because I can't possibly cover all the bases. So can you tell me how? That's a fantastic approach.
Do you think this is a big corporate thing?
Well, I think it might be universal, but I find in big corporations, you are punished for being wrong immediately. So people try very hard never to show that they're wrong. And I think entrepreneurs accept failure much faster because you're more likely to accept it. And so I think that's an entrepreneurial trait. And so there's a difference in the cultural approach that entrepreneurs take. You accept failure much easier. You have to. Because
I would agree with that. I do. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no. That's so I think entrepreneurs understand failure. It's part of our culture. It's part of why we're entrepreneurs. We're in corporate culture. Failure is punished. You have to make people who fail are looked down upon. We think success is a more big thing. And when I was at BP, you always praise the ones who are successful. Where entrepreneurs, we tend to more praise the ones that fail, try again, fail, try again. You hear the stories of an entrepreneur who failed 10 times and then succeeded. In corporate America, the one who went up the ladder was the one who was the better person. So that's one of the things I saw much quicker.
Okay. So then BP was your first exposure to kind of big corporate?
Yes.
How long did you last? Like a couple of weeks or how long? The way you're describing it, it's
that
like
that day. It sounds like that day.
I lasted for about 2 years, and that was about as long as I could last. And then I went from there over to Benvenue Laboratories, which was a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, we're in Bedford there.
Yep, in Bedford. Mm-hmm. And that was another place. That was the last company I worked for before I went off on my own. And that was the last experience I could handle in corporate America. They had constant crashes, and in pharmaceutical, there is a requirement that you have to keep 7 years of history.
Okay.
They had a crash, and I stayed up for 3 days straight to fix this crash, because if I didn't fix this crash, they were going to go out of business. After I was up for 3 days straight, I had gone home. I went to bed. An hour later, they called me and told me to come back in. I thought the system had crashed again, so I got dressed. I ran back in. I got in there. All these people were sitting around the table. My manager said, okay, we need to know. Did the old network administrator come in and attack our system? I looked at him and I said, did you seriously just call me back in to ask if the old manager was attacking our system?
Apparently so.
I said, it was not the old manager. It was because you didn't give me the budget to fix our computers properly. I got up, I went home, and I said I never wanted to work for a corporation again. And I got my friends together, and we started On Technology Partners.
You're giving me flashbacks, Ken, to my early days on Wall Street. You know, this is back in the mid-90s where technology was what it is today. And you know, back then, we'd be doing things in real time. And you know, as a young analyst at a big investment bank, mm-hmm. you know, I would be up lots of all-nighters and all kind of stuff. And I remember mm-hmm. one trip I had where we had a call with a client in Boston. We're in New York, and you know, we didn't get the stuff done to send it out, you know, by FedEx or everything. It wasn't done till you know 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. So I grabbed the plane and flew up to Boston, get the car, get in there, and I go in the conference room to deliver our, you know, our pitch book stuff, what we were talking about, and the folks from New York were on the phone. I'd kind of get in there, I'd deliver things. I'm like, hey, good to see everybody, and I head back to Logan and fly back to New York, and I get in my car hoping to go, you know, because I've been up for a couple of days, so I'm hoping to go home and sleep now for a few hours. Right, I get in my apartment, get ready to get into bed, and my pager goes off, because right, we didn't have cell phones back then. I'm looking, I go, You got to be kidding me. Like, I just need some sleep. So I go back in. There was no emergency. He's like, hey, you got to be in here. It's on to the next thing. Here's what they learned. We got to do that. I'm like, are you serious, right? So, you know, I couldn't stand being with big corporations either because I grew up with small companies. That was my first exposure. I'm thinking, is that how all these people are? Mm-hmm. Is that how all these people are, Jack? What do you think?
That's it.
All right.
That's it.
So
it's hardwired.
All right, so you tried. You tried to have a job. You tried to work for the man, as they say. And you just said, and you shared a story when we first met with you. You talked about how you just wanted to get stuff done, mm-hmm. right? You said, because, your point is people are afraid to make mistakes. So they won't try stuff.
Exactly.
You don't seem to ever be afraid of trying stuff, it sounds like.
No, I think you got to try. I just believe you go out there, you give it a shot. If it fails, you try again. If it fails, you try again. Okay. I think I love the concept of MVP. Minimum viable product. The market will tell you if it's a good idea or not. The sooner you get out there, the sooner you know if people want to buy it. And so I've been doing this, trying something, see what happens, try it again. If it doesn't work, don't take it as a failure. Take it as there's something else to try tomorrow. And I love that idea.
That's a good positive outlook. And that's the other MVP, right, Jack?
MVP,
not maximum value partners,
right,
but
another follower,
minimum value
right.
products. That's good.
That's
mm-hmm.
good.
All right, so you got a couple of friends that you guys said, hey, let's go. So this was after, okay, you're going, hey, let's start a business. Okay,
yep.
So that it was, and they said, let's go. And the next day you're in business? How did that happen?
So basically we get together, and the first thing we do is, this is my wife and two other people. We write a program for Baldwin Wallace College, and that's our first product that we sell. And then we get a contract with Berea City Schools. And
okay.
we start taking care of Berea City Schools. And then we start adding other school districts.
Now, did you have contacts in Berea?
We had contacts at Berea City Schools.
So you got your first sale. It's an important, folks, as folks are listening, if you haven't started a company yet, that's a great way to get started is you have something to be able to sell. You have your first sale in place to say, hey, people often will joke, like, how do I know when I'm in business? Everybody's like, well, if you made any sales, you're in business because you got somebody to pay you for what your product or service. So, okay, so you guys had a nice little jump start with Baldwin Wallace, your alma mater, Jack, right?
Back
when it was a college back in the day. Now it's a university, right?
Yep, now it's a university.
They've upgraded. But, yeah, okay, so then that goes into Berea City School. So you're using your know, like, and trust folks who you can network a little bit. Okay, all right.
Yep, and then we got Cuyahoga Heights Schools, and I was there for 8 years. And actually, that's the first – we turned them into the first wireless public school in Ohio.
Okay.
And then we got school districts in Southern Ohio, and we got about 6 school districts that we were working with for a while. And then I got a couple of pharmaceutical companies, and then we just started getting more and more companies, and we kept growing that way.
Okay.
And we continued to grow and got a good base up until, unfortunately, 2008.
Okay. And things happened in 2008,
people,
right?
Yeah, a lot of people had issues in 2008, so yes. You were right with them.
And folks, not everybody survived 2008, so we know Ken survived because Ken's still here, right? So mm-hmm. we're going to hear, we had up against our first break here, Ken, so I wanted to kind of hold the audience's attention. They can't wait to hear what happened in 2008 for you. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hear about what happened there, and I know we got part of the story, too, in terms of how you started to revamp the company, which we'll get into, too, which should be fun. So stay tuned. We got more discussions here with Ken Fanger of On Technology Partners. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini, and we look forward to hearing from Ken here in a few minutes.
That's right. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And we're in studio here tonight. We have Ken Fanger from On Technology Partners who is joining us tonight. And he was talking in the first segment, giving a little history about his background and how he just knew he wasn't cut out for corporate America. And he tried. He tried twice and failed twice at being in corporate America. So he knew he had to start his own company. So he gave us a little history about that starting. And as we're coming to break, he said, hey, there was this big thing that happened in 2008. And we're going to find out what happened in 2008, Ken. So tell us about 2008.
So in 2008, we were doing really well, closing in on $1 million. And then within 1 year, we lost 90% of our business.
Oh, boy.
90%. Okay.
90%.
Was there like a big customer kind of thing? Or there was a bunch of
customers? Well, it was a bunch.
You went back and applied for a job at BP?
No, I did something worse.
Worse.
I learned my second lesson. So my first lesson was always be wrong. My second lesson, when you go on an airplane, they tell you when that mask falls, put it on yourself first. So I had 10 employees. We started getting those letters that say, basically, we can't pay you. All of our customers were sending us these letters instead of sending the checks they owed us. Hmm. And school districts were sending us contract termination letters.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I wanted to keep my employees on. So I was taking out personal loans and I was taking out credit card debt to keep all my employees on. And I didn't have any work for them because I didn't want to lay them off. And I was over $250,000 trying to keep them on. And I was only making $150,000 in income at that point. And it was a terrible mistake. I should never have done it.
How long did that last?
About 11 months.
Almost a year, okay.
Almost a year of this.
And that's not unusual at all. One of those, again, this is a Dirty Secrets of Small Business show. That's why it's called that. It's so often people don't appreciate that. And I grew up with it. You know, my parents, much like you and your wife, they worked together for about 40 years, which I thought was normal, but I realized as I got older, it's pretty unusual, right? But over the course of that 40 years of running the business, there are lots of ups and downs. And, you know, and there were times where things were going kind of negative. It maybe had to make some layoffs. But the first thing they always would do is they would adjust their compensation first. And often it would, you know, maybe be cut by 20% or maybe cut by half, or often it may go down to almost zero at times. And that's a very, very common thing. And I don't think the owners get enough appreciation for something like that, Ken. It's a common thing because you feel obligated. You know, these are your employees, these are your team. The emotional, if people on the outside looking in are objective. You know objectively. You know this is not the right thing to do. But, oh, man, you're feeling it in your heart. You feel it in your guts. Like, it just... I got to do it. Plus, you're going to be an optimist. Hey, we're going to get this thing figured out. We're going to get this thing kind of turned around. These are good people. I want to make sure these folks are here. So, okay. So, you're 11 months in, $250,000 in personal debt. What made you to make the decision? You kind of just ran out.
There's
of
no money.
Money
left.
Okay. Yeah.
It was
okay.
Just
so,
done.
Took it all the way to the end and said, okay, we're done. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. Then what happened?
Then we ended up having to still lay everybody off.
Okay.
So, this is why I now tell any small business, lay them off sooner, because it took us 10 years. To get ourselves out of that hole. And it was a mistake that I wish I wouldn't have done, because it cost us almost $250,000 in interest charges to pull out. I mean, it was a terrible mistake. But yeah. We learned our lesson and we didn't have to go bankrupt. Some miracle that we didn't. But
so
yeah.
Should we call that your PhD? I know you had your undergrad and your graduate degree, so we'll call
that
your PhD.
My PhD.
You know,
pain.
We see that a lot in our coaching practice. When a crisis hits a company, the owners, because of the emotional ties, mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
You don't want to, coming back to failing, you don't want to admit that. And quite frankly, it's difficult sometimes because you find you can work your way through some of these adverse situations and come out of it. So yep. When do you give up? That's a tough one. Well, when we coach a client, we say always do what's best for the company. And you have to harden yourself to that. And yeah. That means perhaps laying people off right away. As long as you're guided by your numbers, not run the company by the numbers, guide it by the numbers. You can see that coming. And boy, to create a crisis for yourself like that, sure, I could see that. Don't want to do that.
Yeah, we have a number of folks we talked to, or clients we've had, where they want to put together like a rainy day fund, where they want to make sure I've got enough. And they say, I want to be able to cover my payroll for 3 months in case something goes wrong and we lose all our business. We go, well, that doesn't happen very often. You're an example where it does. It's things out of your control. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, nobody saw it coming, and that probably happened within a matter of a month or so. I mean, it was
yes.
like it was
like almost
like they're all talking to each other. Like, wait a minute, who's gonna? How'd this all happen? Okay, all right.
It was
so
what? Almost say that again. You were saying it was almost.
Well, it was almost a month, and it was. I mean, the letters started coming in almost instantly, and I would tell you, even if you have 3 months of runtime, don't wait 3 months right. to start to do the layoffs. As soon as you see a major crisis, as soon as the numbers tell you you're not getting the income. We would no longer wait. I would give the bad news and take the hit as soon as you can take the hit.
I think right. You're absolutely right on that score. You know, yeah. Be decisive, play the moment, and you know you aren't a charity. Mm-hmm. It's however you got to rationalize it in your own mind. You'd love to keep status quo, but it's totally on your back. And unless you have unlimited funds, that's not going to work too often if there's any prolonged pain here. But, yeah, that's a valuable lesson to learn.
Yes, it is. It's a painful one to learn.
It sure is.
So it probably changed your view in terms of employees maybe versus contractors, I'm guessing, in terms of how you maybe did you adjust the business that way or in terms of for the next 10 years. You said you were digging out of debt, but you also you were growing the business again.
We were growing the business again. We did Jumpstart was just starting at that time, so we started working with Jumpstart. We're actually, there was two employees in Jumpstart, which is a economic nonprofit. We were called in as almost a third employee, and we've been working with them ever since. We built their network, and we've helped a lot of the Jumpstart startup companies, and we continue to do that. So that was kind of funny. Right after we got crushed, we have helped other small businesses. And it's great to be able to help other small companies in Northeastern Ohio and where we can help them not fall into the same trap we fell into.
Sure.
And so it's been good to be the company that is the poster child for what not to do.
Well, we say some of our best lessons we learn from our mistakes, and some are more costly than others. But I appreciate you sharing that because it's helpful for our listeners to hear about it. Because again, they're probably wrestling with that. It's as silly as it sounds, folks. We often have to yell at our clients to make sure they take care of themselves too. You know, it's often, especially early on in companies, where they'll be hiring good people and bringing them in. They feel, I got to make sure I take care of this person, that person. It's like, okay, well, who's taking care of you? Again, we got your point. Put the mask on. I got to put the mask on you first. If you don't have any oxygen, you're not doing anybody any good, right?
Exactly.
So you got to make sure we're there to take care of stuff. So, okay, so you got involved with Jumpstart is a very good group. We've been aware of them, obviously, for the years they've been around. They seem to have evolved into not only just with the startups now, but they seem to be helping a lot of folks that are ongoing companies, too, and have really evolved their model. And I think it's a model that's starting to be put around the country, too. I know it's been talked about. So it's always great. Yeah, Cleveland, we have a lot of great things going on here in Cleveland that people often don't talk enough about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got involved with those guys, which that's been helpful for your business to kind of get it re-going as well, sounds like. Okay.
Yes, it's been great. And it's been a wonderful opportunity to be part of all of these kind of homegrown opportunities that make the region better every day.
Right.
And it's nice to be the center of the country for that type of growth and see what's happening and see why we can be such a great region.
Right. Now, you mentioned before we're talking, you got involved with the RNC convention that was here.
Yes. So when the RNC was coming to Cleveland, we've been working with the city of Cleveland in different departments. We work with the power, we work with water, we work with council. And when they were coming in, we were asked by Cleveland Public Power to help make sure that the security standards were in place, because if somebody was going to attack the RNC, they could attack the power grid.
Okay.
And so we were part of the group that was making sure the power grid was protected so that they wouldn't shut down the power in the middle of the convention.
Well, that's not a bad idea sometimes.
Well, it depends on your beliefs,
that's
and you
right.
know, I don't make judgments.
Depends on who's talking, that's right.
So, yes, we were part of the group that made sure that there was security on the power grid. Mm-hmm. From a network standard.
Well, you obviously did a great job because there was no problem. I remember what Super Bowl was that? That was maybe 5 years ago when it was the Ravens and the 49ers, the Harbaugh Bowl.
Yep.
Where I think this is the start of the second half or something like that.
Yep.
Also
the power went out.
The power went out, right?
Yep.
And it changed the tenor of the game because the team that was leading
wound
up losing their lead. So they probably would wish they'd had you guys on the
team
at that point, right?
You could have done that.
Because, it's a big thing. It's like, where's the light switch? Who turned off the lights, right? It's like, what's kind of going on? So you had a good chance to kind of start to rebuild all this stuff and kind of get happening, which is cool. And you've learned some lessons along the way, but, you know, I guess it's good that you had that experience with big corporations. You know, Jack was joking that you'd go, apply for a job back at BP. One of the things we try to explain to people is, once you make that step out, when you step out of the corporation, you start to do your own thing, it is so difficult to go back, and especially if you are truly an entrepreneur. If you're not an entrepreneur, you're really more of a job person, it's a safe haven to go back to. But for most of us, once you do step out, it's like, hey, the idea of going back, you'll do almost anything, right? Yeah, so he went to the extreme. I'm going to do this and put myself in crazy debt in order to kind of avoid that. But it's a great motivator. Say, hey, look, I'd rather put my time and effort into this to make this thing start to happen. And so part of Ken's story, which we're going to get into as we get back from break, I want to talk about his experience with Goldman Sachs and the 10,000 Small Business Program there. But it helped you to kind of recreate the company a bit and started to kind of learn. And after almost two decades in business, you kind of reshuffled, which is a great gutsy effort. We're going to hear more about that story with Ken Fanger when we come back here. So stay tuned to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini. Look forward to hearing about it, Ken.
All right, we got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right, welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And we're here in studio. We have Ken Fanger from On Technology Partners. We have Ken in here. Part we're going to do in this segment, this is our Goldman 10 for 10 segment. We're going to highlight Ken's experience with the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. So we're going to have Ken kind of tell us a little bit about his experience in terms of how he found out about it, what happened during that, kind of some of his key takeaways, and see how that kind of goes. So, and you've got an interesting story, Ken, because, again, it wasn't necessarily the first thing that you wanted to do. But tell us, how'd you hear about the Goldman Sachs program, and how'd you eventually wind up getting into it?
So, again, because I worked with Jumpstart, I was introduced to Goldman Sachs through Jumpstart. And Lucy was going to go through the program, but she was rejected by it because of our financial position. Okay. We were in terrible financial shape. We were literally unbankable. No bank would touch us. We were so far in debt. Surprisingly, that had two effects on us. One was it motivated Lucy. It enraged her, but it also motivated her. She was bound and determined. They literally told Lucy that we were going to be out of business.
All right. Challenging entrepreneur. Good.
Boy,
good idea.
Some people, you just don't say that to. Well, yes. You do, and it motivates her, like you're saying.
I remember she came home that day, and she said they were wrong, with an extra word in there.
And we're going to show them. Good. All right.
And she does not use that extra word. So that was towards the beginning of the Goldman Sachs program. So it was 3 years later. Jumpstart again asked me to join the program. Lucy would not join the program, so I went and did the program. We had definitely improved our financial position by this time. We still were very heavily in debt, but far less in debt than we were. We're almost bankable at this point.
Okay.
So they let us into the program now.
Okay.
It was an amazing program. And it was actually came at a really good time because I was starting to be drained. We were making good money. We had a lot of clients. But because of the debt load we had, a lot of our profit, almost all of our profit, went to reducing this debt position.
Right.
So I would work really hard, but I would not make a lot of personal income. We didn't get to do very many vacations. You know, we didn't get to any of the rewards because all we did was retire debt year after year after year. So going into this program, I got to meet other entrepreneurs. I got to see what other people were doing. I always had this idea that every entrepreneur was successful but me.
Hold on. That's a good statement. I think that's probably common, whether people have articulated that or not. Kind of think people probably feel that way. Hey, does everybody else kind of know what the heck's going on and they haven't let me on the secret kind of thing? Or
yep.
Okay. All right. So that was your impression going in.
Yeah.
It changed, though, it sounded like.
Well, yes. There was 37 other entrepreneurs in this program with me, and all of them felt the same way I did. They all thought every other entrepreneur was successful.
Except them.
But them.
Okay.
And it was just such a wonderful experience to get to talk with all of them and see that they all felt kind of the same way. And they just were looking for a camaraderie opportunity to see what everybody else was doing. And for 13 weeks, you got to get pulled out of your daily routine of feeling alone. And it let us all connect. And it let us all have an opportunity to remove ourselves from being pulled into our business to being on our business. And even though it's a great training experience, it also is a great bonding experience. And it's a free chance, and I recommend everybody that can do it to do it. And so, like, my growth potential was literally changing the focus of my business. We were a networking company, and we became a technology risk company because of going through Goldman Sachs. And the difference there is a technology risk company actually says what's most important is your business does not care about technology. It cares about your business being able to run if something bad happens. And since I had such good experience with bad things happening to a business, I thought that was a great thing to bring to other businesses.
Very good.
So I was able to transform my company 2 years ago, and it just was amazing. And the thing I did was, because I transformed my company, the first year our revenue went down, but our profits went up.
Mm. Nice. That's what you want. I'll take that any day.
Let me pause. That's another great point. People often are busy chasing sales. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before we got in the air about that, in terms of especially entrepreneurs often have trouble saying no to sales and revenue. We'll figure out some way to be able to service you. And trying to find what a good customer is and looking at those margins, what's kind of going on. It's the idea. Given this example a couple times in terms of the movie Days of Thunder, if you ever saw that or not before, but yeah. You know the scene where you run 50 laps your way and my way, and the guy that was more controlled in terms of what Robert Duvall's character was saying, and Cole Trickle, Tom Cruise's character, hey, not only are my tires in better shape, I actually ran faster than you did, right? So it's like, okay, there's different ways to kind of think about stuff, and that's a very, very key thing. That's very, very good. So you started to kind of, when you got to this team, you got out of your business and you got to some folks who were starting to, it sounded like they started to energize you and mm-hmm. to start talking about how can we, again, you weren't going in looking to try to recreate, it was natural outgrowth of being part of this 13-week program of talking about things, what was kind of going on, and all of a sudden some possibilities started to kind of show up.
Yep.
Okay. And that's kind of daunting. And so your point, okay, so first you're out, you're thinking, okay, well, our revenue's down, but okay, our profit's up, maybe this thing might be okay. And continue to kind of grow off of that, it sounds like. Okay.
Well, yeah. So we one of the things we did was we reevaluated the employees we had. We got rid of employees that were not adding value to the company. We reevaluated the customers we had. We made sure the customers were good customers to have. It's not good to have customers that are not adding to your bottom line. We reevaluated products we had. So it was a complete change in what we were doing. We used to sell phone systems, but that didn't fit with the new model we were doing. So we readjusted everything. And of course, because we were getting rid of products, that top line dropped down.
Right.
But because the margins were going up, the bottom line kept going up. It was a great thing to do. And I felt better because the things I was selling fit with what I wanted to be doing.
Okay.
And
as you're coming back out of class, you're sharing this with your partner, also your wife. Is she mm-hmm. thinking like you're totally nuts, or is she saying, hey, you seem like you're onto something? Or how is she responding to this all of a sudden, this light bulb that was going off for you, it sounds like?
Well, she liked the fact that I was back to being happy.
Okay.
Because she was tired of me being grumpy every day.
Profits have a way of doing that, don't they?
Well,
and,
yes.
And your experience with near bankruptcy mm-hmm. basically taught you to harden up and not be a bad man by doing that, but focus on the business. And those processes that you just described are absolutely the way to do it. And some tough decisions had to be made. But nonetheless, you made them. And there's a lot to be said for feeling good about that and being in control, because that's exactly what you're describing. Very good.
Mm-hmm. So having that girl. So she was thinking pretty positive about it. She said, "Oh, this." And she's as a concerned spouse, hey, I'm noticing you're happier. To her, that was, I don't need to see the P&L you're talking about, Jack. I can see my husband. All of a sudden, he's back.
That's right.
I haven't seen this guy in probably maybe it'd been a decade at that point. And so she's starting to see you get re-energized. So she's saying, hey, whatever's going on in that place, keep doing it, right? Keep at it. Okay. So
she also liked the P&L because she watches the P&L. Let me tell you. She looks at the cash flow too.
All right,
so it helped.
Soft, forget it. Never mind.
Everybody's happy in the family now.
Her and the accountant both said, I like the P&L and I'm happy to see the smile.
That's what it was. He showed that first, then she saw the smiley face.
That's right.
That was hiding behind the P&L as he pulled the covers back. All right. So a big part of that, of the program, then again, the camaraderie again, that wasn't probably expected. You know, again, yep. The camaraderie, which was a surprise, the whole reshaping of your business was a surprise. Again, yep. You were thinking, I'm just kind of going. There are people who I trust are telling me this would be good for me. They finally let us in. Okay, so I'm gonna go and I guess being open to it, you know, that's a good thing too. Be open to what's kind of here, and see and embrace. So, and you mentioned too, you know, so this was a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And you still see people pretty often. It sounds like, right?
Well, yeah. And this coming Friday, our group is going to get together again, and we've been doing it for 2 years. So it's been a wonderful experience that just keeps going on and on and on. And that's the type of stuff that makes it so good, because I can keep asking these people. One of the group actually helped me to learn how to call and not be afraid to call, because I hated calling people on the phone. And
many IT people do. It's okay. They'll email. They won't call. They won't text. They won't talk in person. They'll email like crazy. Is that you? You were the email guy? Or?
I was the email guy. All right. I admit it.
Long pages?
No, I hate long emails. I will send like, what's up? And that'll be all. Almost like a texted email. It's the worst thing.
Yeah.
Well, so what was the key that they helped you get out of that? Because that's a key thing, I think, for our listeners. You know, how'd they get you over that hump to get you okay with picking up that 10,000-pound phone to pick it up to your ear? How'd they get you there?
Because he said, well, his thing was, what the heck are you afraid of? What is it you think that person is really going to do to you if you call him? And I had to stop and ask myself, he's right. Why? He can't hurt me. Who cares if he yells at me? And who cares if he hates me?
Right.
And for some reason, I was so afraid that that person's anger was going to somehow make my life worse.
Just an irrational fear.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly what it is. So you confront it and act on it, and all of a sudden, poof. Hey. You know, why did I do this?
Yep.
And yeah, I could understand that.
That was one of the people in your class. That was one of your fellow yes. your fellow scholars. Okay.
Yes, that was at R&K Electric.
Okay.
Kurt Geis. He is, and I'm.
So it wasn't. So he's not. He's not even. He's not a sales guy.
No.
Right.
No. He's an owner of an electric company. He is phenomenal. I wanted to make sure I gave a shout out to him because his advice was so helpful. It was as simple as advice. But it was amazing. And that's the type of advice that your cohort members give you.
So just a quick clarifier, because, you know, you're a technology company going in this thing. This is not a room full of technology companies.
No.
These are entrepreneurs, and mm-hmm. there probably wasn't, you know, was there anybody with technology? Probably not.
There was
not.
one other technology company, but it's a whole bunch of different companies. And that's what makes it so great is lots of different groups out there, lots of different people to learn from. It's not the same.
Okay. Now, is there anything, I know you're a big fan of it, is there anything that they could have done different or better that you'd hope that they could have, you know, or maybe suggestions to kind of tweak the program a little bit?
I'm trying to, not that I can think of, no, because they had really good instructors, the classes were good. I wish, actually, there's one thing. I wish they had a way to come back 6 months or a year later for one or two classes. Because the problem is you have 13 weeks and then it just kind of ends.
Right.
And a refresher to help reinforce some of the topics later would be really good. Because unfortunately, like anything, you learn it and you lose it.
Yeah.
And so that would be the one thing I'd like, is something to make it, after I get it, to reinforce and learn it. Would be great.
Yeah, it's very intensive. We're up against our break here. It's a very intensive program, folks. It's at least a day a week for 13 weeks. So I think Ken mentioned it's priced right because it's free from a cost standpoint, but it's a lot of time and effort to kind of get into it. It's intense. They throw a lot at you. So you come out of those days, you feel like your head's, you know, swimming full of ideas. Some sink in, to your point, and, hey, some don't. But hey, if I had a refresher 6 months, a year down the road, it might be helpful. That's very good. All right. So that's our Goldman 10 for 10 corner here for today's show. Thank you, Ken, for doing that. When we come back, we're going to talk more about now what Ken's done with this revamped business, how it's kind of continued to kind of launch and succeed, and what's kind of going forward. Plus, you have some other things you'll be able to get into now that you have some more time to kind of get into some stuff. There's a nonprofit that you're getting launched too. We want to talk about. So stay tuned. We got a lot more to talk about in our last segment here with Ken Fanger. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini. Look forward to it, Ken, very much.
That's right. Stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online WINTradio.com. So All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business, the fastest hour here in radio and the podcast sphere, Jack. What do you think?
I think Ken and Adam, you guys have been good tonight. So let's keep it going. One more segment.
So we just finished up with the review of the Goldman Sachs experience, and a big part of the experience for Ken for that was to relaunch the business and refocus in a whole different way. So what kind of things do we have kind of going on here, you know, to continue to kind of grow your success? What other things do you see in the future now for On Technology Partners?
So as we move forward, Lucy was a nurse, and she wanted On Technology Partners to look back into the healthcare world. And one of the things we started to do, we went back to Jumpstart, because Jumpstart helps companies grow. And as we started to look into healthcare, Jumpstart told us to look into the opioid crisis. And we started looking into the opioid crisis. I saw a story that just kind of broke my heart. I can't remember the book now, but the story went like this. It was about a family whose son got injured, and they took their child to the doctor. When they went to the doctor, he prescribed OxyContin. Now, the family knew about the opioid crisis, but they trusted their doctor to keep their child safe. They had their son on OxyContin for 6 months. The son became addicted to OxyContin. But at the end of 6 months, the doctor just canceled the prescription. The kid was addicted, was taken off OxyContin, found heroin, overdosed, and died.
Oh, boy.
The reason why that struck me so close was my son had a seizure disorder when he was born. So he is completely dependent on our doctor for the medication that he has to take. I have to trust that the doctor is doing the right thing, or else I wouldn't know. So that bothers me deeply, that a doctor would betray his patient that deeply. So all of us know all the statistics. All of us know the terrible things. 4 million people are on opioids right now. 40,000 people die a year from it. It feels overwhelming, and I felt overwhelmed by those numbers. So I decided, what if we just go with doing one story at a time, instead of trying to do this overwhelming approach? So I created this website called peopleofsubstance.net to tell one story at a time, because we got to stop thinking of this as an overwhelming problem and make it a small, easy problem. So we're trying to do things one story at a time. We're trying to solve things one problem at a time. Because everything out there, everybody throws too big. You look at climate change, you look at hunger, you look at every problem nowadays is too big to handle. Everything is too big to handle. We all give up. If 50 million people solve one little problem, think of what we could do. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to solve opioids, one little problem, instead of one big problem.
And the focus is on sharing the stories, and that's a fantastic thing, because there's a lot of shame is the right word, or embarrassment or guilt that kind of goes with this stuff, and people in their minds have some idea of what they think the story might be, versus you share the story. It's like it can happen to anybody.
Yep.
That story where, again, most of us are relatively trusting doctors. If we have kids are involved in activities or we're involved in activities, things kind of happen. You just don't realize here's how that can go. It's not like all of a sudden, you have a story of somebody maybe is experimenting here or there. That's probably more the outlier versus, hey, it's just kind of normal day-to-day stuff we're doing. We're trying to be healthy, get recovered from stuff, and all of a sudden this happens, right?
Yep.
And, as you mentioned that, we had a speaker a couple of years ago, I think it was about a year and a half ago, at Rotary. It was the Lorain County coroner. And he talked about this crisis. He showed some numbers in terms of the number of opioid deaths in Lorain County. And from like 2000 to 2015, it was about 10 or 12 each year, you know, kind of steady. And the last 3 or 4 years, also they see this thing 10, 12, 15 times. So it was 100, 150 people. And he goes, what's going on here? And he said, people, the stuff we're seeing, he goes, yeah, we're seeing a little bit of stuff with heroin. He said, but it's more on these prescription stuff. And he gave us the background. I said, what happened was a lot of the biggest insurer is Medicare and Medicaid. And there's our culture is trying to make sure that nobody feels any pain at all.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these doctors, the insurance companies, primarily the Medicare and Medicaid, said, hey, we're not going to reimburse you unless you're prescribing medication for these folks to help relieve their pain. So it's they're almost forcing them to start to write these prescriptions. And hey, and this coroner's guy goes, look, opiates, they've been around for thousands of years, folks. And no matter what form they come in, they are always addictive. He said, yep. People will say this, and we got found this new way of doing it. He goes, but it's always addictive. And he said, and you'll see different combinations. So people all of a sudden, yeah, they start with the prescription drugs, and also maybe they pull. Like I said, we're cutting you right off. Okay, well, heroin is a much easier thing to get and a lot less expensive than trying to get other, the medication. Yeah. So it can lead to that, and it's a real, it's a real problem. And I think we're at the point now. I think most people you talk to have had some sort of impact from opioids, whether it be directly for them, a friend, a family, somebody that they know, where I'm sure if they look back 10, 15 years ago, maybe it wasn't the case, but now it seems to be a big deal. So it's something that you're very passionate about.
How do you fund your nonprofit? Or how do you plan on funding it? Because it's relatively new.
We've only launched it 3 weeks ago, and we have a GoFundMe that we're trying to fund it with. So far, I funded it myself. But we're looking if people will go and give donations at the GoFundMe. The hope is to have it so that it will tell you stories close to you as we get stories. And hopefully people will donate on the GoFundMe site so that we can build it out. And the big thing I'm hoping for is more people will give stories so that we can put more stories on there. And we're hoping that people will share. The big thing here is I want to remove the stigma of the opioids because people seem to think addicts choose this life. That is not true.
Yeah, a lot of misinformation out there.
Yes.
No question.
This is not, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be an addict. That is not how it works. This is not a lifestyle. This is not a choice. This is a disease. It's a tragedy. And the funny thing is, when I started this, and it was only 3 weeks ago, I found people close to me in my life that I never knew had addiction are coming forward and telling me. And it's so wonderful to see because I didn't think this was affecting in my life. And now I'm seeing it. And I'm so proud that they're willing to tell me this, but they're trusting me now, which they didn't do before. So I'm glad this is happening. And I hope other people will see they can come forward and not be ashamed that this is happening. And so that's the best of all. And if you go out to http.peopleofsubstance.net, there's a link on the bottom that you can click on to help fund this. And if you give a $100 donation, you will get a People of Substance t-shirt, which has been designed by an addict. And one of the things we're trying to do is build more and more of this out, these sites out. The next thing we're hoping to do is start actually having videos, and all of the stories are actually in the words of the addicts. So that's one of the neat things of this site.
Good. We'll include a link to that site, and it's right on there, peopleofsubstance.net, and we'll have it in the show notes. And as Ken said, there's a spot right down there in the middle of the page that you can click on for the GoFundMe to kind of go there and be a part of it. It's true. It's like anything else. You were talking before about going into the Goldman program or talking to people where you feel like everybody else has things kind of figured out. You can make a lot of comparisons between entrepreneur owners are in their own little world versus somebody who's having an issue with addiction where they feel like they're the only ones kind of going through stuff. And so they start to shine light on that to kind of bring it to light. So that's good. Now that you're starting to get freed up and starting to, you've been relieved of the burden of having to pay off all all those debts. You're now able to free up doing well, and you're able to now start to kind of get into this stuff. So take that energy that you've got and put it towards some more positive stuff out there to kind of do things and be able to kind of grow, make things happen. So what are the kind of things we have going? We got a couple minutes left here for the show. Do you have other things that you see for the future of On Technology Partners? What do you see the next 10 years. You know, are you thinking of those kind of chunks now? Is the business now reset for the next decade?
Well, yeah, we are. So we are definitely focusing in on government. Like I said, we just won another government contract with the city of Cleveland. We've just hired another person. We're hoping to double in size by this time next year. We want to kind of have controlled growth. We don't want to be a $1 billion company. That's never been a focus of ours. But we do want to have steady and continued growth and keep kind of growing larger and larger. One of the other things we're looking at doing is getting back into schools and creating what we call a telesafe station to help work on the mental health issues in schools, because we know that schools can't put counselors into every school district. So we want to start putting in a station where students can go and get mental health services in every school system. So that's the next program that we're working on.
It's a lot of good stuff, and the future
sure is.
The future very is very, very bright. Yeah. Well, as I told you before we got in the air, Ken, this is gonna be a fast hour, and it always is. So we're up here in our last minute. We thank you very much for coming in, for coming in today and sharing your story with us, and uncovering quite a few dirty secrets, which is fantastic. It's great for our audience. We thank you for listening today, and coming in next week, we're gonna have a back-to-back Goldman's here. Mike DeStefano from DMS Management Solutions is going to be here next week. He's supposed to be here in March. He's finally recovered from his illness, folks. He promises me he's going to be here next week. I know we've teased this a couple times. He's actually going to be here next week, if I have to drag him here and tie him to the chair. So we'll have another segment with Mike next week. So please tune in next week, next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Hey, thanks for listening to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. If you want to get more or you missed any of these shows, you can go to dirtysecretsofsmallbusiness.com. Or you can go to any of iTunes or anything else you get podcasts from and see the older shows that are there. Hey, you can learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Hey, thanks for listening on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com.